Well, amen. That's a good song. September the 10th, I will begin a series on heaven. And it will go for at least 3 weeks, if not four. And so I hope that maybe that song kind of sparked a little bit in your soul. A few minutes ago when we were shaking hands, I was going up and down the aisles here. And I came by Miss Gilda, and she told me that it would be Brother Ray's, I think, 84th. Is that right? 84th birthday. He's with the Lord today. And, you know, I believe that the Lord does this from time to time. I believe that the Lord just kind of tells our loved ones that we're doing good, if we are. I don't think that he does anything to take joy from them. But perhaps, I told her perhaps today the Lord just maybe whispered to him and said, Ray, Guild and some of the folks at church, just they thought about you today on your birthday. And so September the 10th, a series begins on heaven. I call your attention to the Gospel of John, chapter 13. The Gospel of John, chapter 13. Our text verses today will be verse 34 and verse 35. It says this, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you love one another. In the mid-1600s, there was a great preacher in Scotland named Samuel Rutherford. He was a godly man. He preached and ministered in a place called Anwoth, A-N-W-O-T-H. He would be banished to a place called Aberdeen not long into his ministry. And the reason was because the British had instituted a rule over the Scots and said, no longer can you use a Presbyterian style or order of worship. And so Rutherford, like many of the Scots, they didn't particularly like the British telling them what to do, and so they didn't do it. And so he got in trouble. And he was so adamant about it that he said, there will never be a bishop from anywhere that will stand in my pulpit or come into my home. Well, it wasn't long after that. One night they had gotten all in for the evening, and they heard a knock on the door. And there was a stranger that came to the door, dressed very poorly. And he asked, he said, is there a way that I could maybe have some accommodations for tonight? And of course, Rutherford, being a Christian man, and at that time they didn't have Motel 6 or a Holiday Inn Express. I don't think Howard Johnson? I don't think that's around anymore. But they didn't have Holiday Inn Expresses. And so him being a Christian man, being hospitable, he said, sure, stranger, come on in. They gave him something to eat, and he said, now before my home retires for the evening, one of the things that we always do is we have devotion. And we take time to read, and we take time to pray. And so the stranger said, well, that would be fine. He still had not introduced himself. Rutherford had not asked at that time. And as they got finished with the devotion, and I've read the story two different ways. One person says that Rutherford asked. One person says his wife asked. She looked at the stranger, he looked at the stranger and said, how many commandments are there? And the stranger, without really raising his head, he said, 11. And Rutherford said, excuse me, but I don't think you understood the question. How many commandments are there? And the man said, 11. And Rutherford, his wife, said, I think it would be hard to find in all of Scotland a man so ignorant as to not know that there were only 10 commandments. And said that the stranger raised his head and said, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another. if you believe that Jesus gave the original ten, when he says, a new commandment I give unto you, I believe that takes it to 11. Now, there's some ways that you can look at this. If you look at this commandment, you could take the last six of the big ten, and you could lump all of those into this commandment. And you could look at it and say, honor your father and your mother. Well, if you love your mother and father, then you will honor them. Well, it says, do not steal. If you love God, you won't be a thief. If it says not to covet your neighbor's wife, if you love God, you won't covet your neighbor's wife. And so there's either 11 commandments, or we can simply take this commandment along with the second one Jesus said, which is love your neighbor as yourself. And it says on these, the whole law hinges. And so love is a pretty popular subject. I think most of us probably would agree with that. You've got websites about it. You've got chat rooms about it. Years ago, they used to have in the classifieds personal ads that people would put in. And I'm afraid that when you are looking at websites and chat rooms, and if there are still personal ads, I'm thinking that you're probably looking for love in all the wrong places, as that country song went 40 years ago. Well, we think about love all the time. And let's face it, everybody wants it. If there was a way that we could have it, we would do anything within our power to get it. I heard some funny things about love. How many of you have an idea what the longest kiss on record is? Anybody gotten that idea? Without looking at your phone and looking it up fast? All right. I'll tell you how long it is. It lasted for, let me get my days here. It was 58 hours, so it was over 2 days. 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds. That's a long time. I'm going to tell you where it happened at. It happened in a place called Pattaya, Thailand. Ripley's, believe it or not, had a contest there. And so for 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds, a couple kissed. Doesn't your breath get bad during that time? I mean, that's a long time. I heard about another guy. This guy was a painter in France, and he was just enthralled with the phrase, and I can't say it in French, but it was I love you in French. The guy's name was Marcel Leclerc. All right? He had written out I love you 1,875,000 times. Now you would think somebody that had written that out 1,875,000, you would think that would be impressive to his girl. Until you found out that the guy paid somebody else to do it. It kind of takes a little of the sheen off of it, doesn't it, ladies? All right? And so you've got people that think about love. What about kids? What do they think about it? I have a website that sends me little humorous things 4 or 5 times a week. And a year or two ago, they sent something that I thought was pretty good. They were asking some kids, what do they think love is? And one kid said this, said, it's where a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on aftershave and they just smell each other. Another one said something like this. It was like a girl tells a boy that she likes his shirt, so he wears it every day. And then one that's really not too far from really being true. This one little girl said, I think love is this. My grandmother has arthritis now in her hands. And she can't paint her toenails and her fingernails anymore. So my grandfather, he does it for, even though he has arthritis in his hands. That's pretty close right there. Now the smelling part, that's probably going to come and go. But all of us think about love. You know, the Bible has a lot to say about it. 500 times the Bible uses the word love. In the Gospel of John, the first 12 chapters, it's only used 12 times. But from chapter 13, where we're at today, through the end of the chapter, it's used 44 times. It's as though the Lord is saying, all right, as I get in this last week, and by the way, from chapter 13 through the crucifixion, which is chapter 19, and then the resurrection is just a few days later, we're only talking about the last week and a half of Jesus' life in the last half of the Gospel of John. It's not like Luke, where he begins at the beginning and chronologically goes all the way through. John, he focuses basically on that last week. And so, in our passage today, I want us to think about three things. The first thing that I want you to think about is this. I want you to think about the command. The command. If you look at verse 34, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another. Now somebody says, well, wait a minute now. I remember reading over in Leviticus where it talks about loving your neighbor. And that's true. If you'll look at that word new, it doesn't have the idea of new in relation to something that's never been before. But it has the idea of new in the fact that it has never been used before. If I were going to give you an example, I could give you the example of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan story is one that you have all heard. You've got a man that was Jewish. He's going down the road. He is attacked. He is robbed. He is beaten. And he's left basically for dead. A Jewish priest walks by. He sees the man and thinks, I can't mess with him. I got to get away from him. He gets over to the other side of the road, walks right on by, and leaves the man in his condition. A Levite walks by, does the exact same thing. Now, these are people that are steeped in Judaism. I mean, they know the law. They know Leviticus 19, verse 18. But yet, they both walk by. Why? Because they don't consider him to be worthy. They don't consider him to be, I guess, worthy enough to love. They're not his neighbors in their mind. But then there's a third man that comes by. And this man, he's a Samaritan. Jews and Samaritans didn't even like each other. The Jews in their race felt superior because the Samaritans were basically, they were half-breeds. They were part Jewish, they were part Gentile, and so the purebreds didn't like the half-breeds. That's pretty much the way that it was. And so what you've got is you've got this man that was a Samaritan, and he sees this man, he has compassion on him, he goes over, he helps him, he puts him on his beast, he takes him to an inn, and he tells the man, he said, you take care of him, and when I get back, I'll pay the bill. That is love. That's the command. But those in Judaism did not have that. And so that is something that it was new only in the sense that that love had not been being used. I'll give you a humorous illustration. I was thinking about this week. We've got a wonderful couple that's in this church. They're pretty much shut-ins now. They don't really get out a whole lot. Junior and Annette Hicks. Miss Hicks was Brother Don's, really his first secretary. And so Miss Hicks was the secretary at the church when I got here. And it was so funny, some of the stories that you would hear. She would say, I got to leave 15 minutes early today because I got to beat Junior home. Said the credit card statement's in the box today. And I got to get it out before he gets home. And Junior would pay those credit cards off, and then he would say, I'm going to take that card from you. And one day she'd come in and said, he did it, Brother Tommy. He took my card. He'd get it paid down to zero, and she'd charge $500 at Macy's. Well, Miss Hicks was notorious for garage sales. She loved to have garage sales. But the problem was this. Whenever she would go to places like Rich's and Macy's and she would buy these dresses, she never would wear them. She'd just have them hanging in her closet. 3 years later, she'd say, I got to have a garage sale. And she'd take all of those dresses that she had never worn. The tags would still be on them. And she might have paid $40 for a dress or $75, whatever they cost. She may sell that thing for $5. And it still have the tags on it. It was new, but it was unused. That's the word that we have here. So it wasn't that it was something brand new. It was just something that people in Judah and people in Israel just did not use. And so the first thing we see is the command. But the second thing that I want you to see is found in the latter part of verse 34. He said, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. So number two is we see the standard. The standard. Now all of us have measuring sticks that we go by. You know, we may look at one another and say, well, I'm better looking than that guy is. Well, I'm smarter than that lady is. Well, I drive a better car than that person does. And there's always standards that we use. If I were to ask you to give yourself a rating from 1 to 10 on the love scale, how would you rate? 7? 8? 9? Now let's face it, none of us would be so arrogant as to say 10. Because none of us love to perfection. But yet, when we use Jesus as the measuring rod, we all kind of fall short of that, don't we? We all fall short of it. So if we were going to say, well, how did Jesus love? I want to give you some verses today, and there's about three ways that I just want to use today. There's probably more, but I want to give you some that I think you can just jot down quickly. So how did Jesus love? First of all, he loved sacrificially. Sacrificially. John chapter 3, verse 16 is the verse that most of us first learn. What does it say? It says, for God so loved the world that he what? Gave his only begotten son. So in other words, he took his only son and gave him to be a sacrifice. Not only that, what about Galatians 2:20? I'll get you to turn over to Galatians 2:20 quickly, and we'll look at that. In Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, it says this, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. So in other words, he loved me, he died for me. He gave sacrificially. What about Ephesians? Flip over to Ephesians chapter 5, two verses in chapter 5. Look at verse 2. And walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Look at verse 25. He compares the love that a husband is to have to his wife. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So the first way Jesus loved is sacrificially. How else did he love? Unconditionally. Flip back to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5 and verse 8. But God commendeth his love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So the second way is we were sinners, but no matter what condition we were in, he still died for us. So he loved sacrificially, he loved unconditionally, and then he loved unending or never ending. Look at Romans chapter 8. verse 38 and 39. For I am persuaded, or I'm completely convinced of this, that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. So the love is a never-ending love. So it's sacrificial, it is unconditional, it's never-ending. So, husbands, how are we to love our wives? Sacrificially, unconditionally, never-ending. Wives, how are we to love our husbands and our families? Sacrificially, unconditionally, never-ending. What about our friends? Sacrificially, unconditionally, never-ending. What about other church members? Sacrificially, unconditionally, unending. So we are to love one another with the same love that Jesus had. He said, as I have loved you, that's now the standard. So that means that you can't hold grudges against one another. If you hold grudges against each other, then that love is not sacrificial, it's not unconditional, and it's not unending. And so we need to make sure that we realize that that's the type of love that Jesus expects from us. Do you know one of the problems with holding grudges? You say, I just don't like that person. Well, you know, like and love is two different things. But do you know you're going to be in heaven with other Christians? So don't you think it would give you a lot better shot at the judgment seat if you get a start on that now? If you've got something against a brother or sister, then you've got sin. And the Bible says, if I regard sin in my heart or iniquity in my heart, God won't hear your prayers. Somebody goes, I just don't get any of my prayers answered. Well, is there anything as far as your love is concerned? Is there somebody that you've got an ought against? So the standard is the love of God. It's Jesus' love. Number three, look at verse 35 and we'll see the mark. The mark. By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you have love one to another. In other words, if you want to use a way for people to see if you're a Christian, it's the way that you love each other. Now, let me just interject this. It doesn't say anything about doctrine. There's people that I won't necessarily fellowship with because of their doctrinal positions. If a guy tells me that he doesn't believe in the resurrection, he's not preaching in this pulpit. If a guy tells me that, you know, that he doesn't believe in the inspiration of the Bible, he's never going to teach a Sunday school class here. You have certain things that you will base your fellowshipping on, but the one thing that I will not do is I will not be ugly to somebody that does not hold to every position that I hold to. You know, there's a saying I heard a preacher say one time. He said, we Baptists said, we may not always be right, but we're never in doubt. And I'm not naive enough to think that I'm right on everything. And so I'm going to give some freedom to some things, but I'm not giving them on the fundamentals. But you and I need to still love people. We don't need to have the idea that, well, I don't like that guy at all. And, you know, I know he names the name of the Lord, but, you know, that guy, he's not Baptist. I ain't got much use for him. No, we're supposed to love one another. I got kin folks that aren't Baptists. I've got friends that aren't Baptists. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to be yoking up in every way. But I don't have a problem going to eat with them. I don't have a problem loving them as brothers and sisters. And we don't need to say, I don't love you because I don't agree with you. And so the test here isn't doctrine, even though we're really strong on doctrine here. I mean, we hammer that right and left. Because if you don't believe right, you're not right. Well, not only that, he doesn't use miracles here. He doesn't say, well, you know, if you'll see me do miracles, and then you guys start doing them, everybody will go, wow, they love each other. Man, they must be good people. No, it's not doctrine, it's not miracles. It's not even the love of lost people that he uses here. Now, are all of those things important? Yeah. How do you think Peter and John and the other apostles got a hearing? They raised people that were lame. They helped people that were blind. And people said, hey, those people, look what they can do. Let's listen to them. But for Christian to Christian, which is who we have here, Christian to Christian, it's the love deal. He said that you love one another. That's the mark. If churches are fussing and fussing and fussing, what does the community think? There's a church, and let's just say it's heading south on Highway 36. I know about the church because over 40 years ago, I preached there as a college student. It had wood slat benches in it, and if you moved wrong, it would pinch you. I know of at least 7 to 8 different preachers that have gone there, and every time the church starts doing a little bit, somebody starts a fuss because somebody thinks they're going to lose some power. I've told the church about another church that I know of going up above Gainesville. And that church split over a chicken leg. And so you've got churches that fuss. But the mark of a Christian that the world looks for, they don't look at your doctrine. The world doesn't look at necessarily activities that you've got. The world looks to see how you treat each other. That's the mark. I mean, it's as though you got it right there on your forehead. The way that you treat people is the mark. Now, when we think about the mark, there's an old church father. And all that term means is that he lived just after the apostles, a couple of hundred years after the apostles. This guy lived about 150 A.D. His name was Tertullian. And you remember in the Roman Empire, it had a pretty vast footprint. And over in an area called North Africa, we would call it modern-day Tunisia, this is where Tertullian resided. Well, the Romans would see these Christians getting together, and they were thinking, I wonder if they're subversive. I wonder if they're trying to rebel. And so one of the things that they would do is they would send spies into these assemblies. And one of the spies went into an assembly, and the word got back to Tertullian, and this is what he wrote. This is from the spy. These Christians are strange people. They meet in an empty room to worship. They do not have an image. They speak of a man named Jesus who is absent, but they expect him to come at any moment. My, how they love him, and my, how they love each other. That was a great testimony in that ancient church. Is it already 12 o'clock? Wow. Real fast. Three ways to grow. Number one, speak well of the church. Well, I like the singing, but that preacher. Well, I like the ball program, but Awana. Get rid of the buts. Number two, learn to express love to other Christians. Be careful, though, about how you do this. Now, we have some folks in our church, and they're big-time huggers. They love hugging each other, you know. And every once in a while, I'll do that. You know, if a guy, you know, if he comes up, we'll shake hands, we'll kind of hug and beat each other on the back real hard to make sure that he knows that I'm a man, all right, you know. Don't want any question about that, you know. Well, there's a comedian that is a Christian. He used to be a Baptist preacher, Baptist pastor. He's still a preacher, but he's a comedian also. And I heard him tell this story, and I'm telling you, and I wrestled last night as I was laying there awake in bed. I was thinking, should I tell this or not? And I'm going to tell it. Guy's name's Dennis Swanberg. Man is as funny as anybody that I've heard in Christian circles. He said, you know, when I was a preacher and a pastor, he said, I had kind of a rule. He said that whenever a lady would come up to me, said I would kind of hug them from the side. And I do that same thing. I mean, that's what they teach you in Bible college and pastoral theology. Got to be careful how you hug the ladies, you know. He said, I was up doing my little program one day, and he said, I was talking about back whenever I was pastoring, and he said, and I still do this now, even though, you know, I'm kind of a humorist. And he said, I don't know why I said this. And there's times when you say things, have you ever said something, you think, why did I say that? Have you ever done that? He said, I'm up there, and I got these people out there, and I'm just, you know, letting them laugh and all of this stuff. And he said, and I was telling them about the way that I hugged. He said, I'd always put my arm around the side and kind of pull them up, pat them on the shoulder a little bit. He said, now, if you are 65 years old or older, he said, I'll give you a frontal. He said, I don't know why I said that. He said, I knew when I said it, that was the wrong thing to say. And he said, so I just kept going, trying to hope, and hopefully nobody remembered it. He said, I got done about 15 minutes later. He said, I went out to my book table, and all of a sudden I see these three women coming, and they're waving their hands and said, we want a frontal, we want a frontal. Well, you got to be careful how you express your love for each other, all right? And then we need to strive to serve other people. Strive to serve other people. Let me tell a story and I'll be done. Probably one of the greatest love stories that I've heard. Richard Seltzer is a surgeon. And he wrote this in a book, and a website called Goodreads picked it up. And the story is this, that there was a lady, a young lady. She and her husband had not been married too long, but they found a tumor in her face. And Seltzer had to remove it. And to remove it, he had to clip a nerve, which made her mouth draw where that it looked like that she had Bell's palsy. The problem was, it could never be repaired. It was always going to be that way. Let me read you the account of this. Seltzer said, I stand by the bed where a young woman lies. Her face is post-operative, and her mouth is twisted, palsy, kind of clownish. A tiny twig of the facial nerve, the one of the muscles of her mouth, had been severed. She will thus, from now on, be this way. Nevertheless, the tumor caused the nerve to be cut. Her young husband's in the room. He stands on the opposite side of the bed, and together they seem to dwell in the evening lamplight. Isolated from me, private, who are they? I ask myself. He and this wry mouth have I made, who gaze at each other and they touch each other, so generously. The young woman speaks, will my mouth always be like this? Yes, I say, it will. Because the nerve had to be cut. She nods and is silent, but the young man smiles. I like it, he says. It's kind of cute. All at once, I know who he is. I understand. I lower my gaze, one not bold enough in an encounter with God. Unmindful, he bends to kiss her crooked mouth, and I'm so close that I can see how he twists his own lips to accommodate hers to show that their kiss still works. Would you rather have a 58-hour kiss? Would you rather have 1,875,000 I love yous? Or would you rather have your husband or your wife show you love where that they're willing to twist their mouth to fit yours so that they know, or that you know, that they still love you and that affection still works? The 11th commandment, love each other. If there's a mark that this church ought to always exhibit to those that come inside here, people ought to say, as guests, they ought to say, my, how those people at Corinth love each other. My, how they love. That is my prayer as the pastor, is that we will have a church, not that's just friendly, but that our friendliness just overflows. It just oozes love for each other. Let's stand together. Heads bowed, eyes closed, no one looking around.